Well, good evening. I'm Robert A. Wilson with Cowboy. I'm kind of getting in a hurry. Good evening. I'm Robert A. Wilson with Cowboy Wisdom Radio, and tonight my guest is Montgomery Granger. And Montgomery is the author of Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay. And Montgomery was assigned as a medical service officer responsible for the care and treatment of detainees in both Iraq and in Guantanamo Bay. The major, tonight we will discuss the future of Guantanamo Bay, and also we're going to talk about the Geneva Conventions and the law of land warfare that do not require prosecution of the detainees. And we're also going to talk about a multitude of current events that are going on with Montgomery. And without any further ado, I want to welcome Montgomery Granger, the author of Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay, to the show. Welcome, Montgomery. How are you?
I'm great. I'm always so grateful to you, Robert. You're a great American and a true patriot, and I consider it a great privilege and a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you.
Well, it is, but there's one thing I want to really talk about right away is the cut in veteran benefits by the Obama administration. Isn't that kind of like a slap in the face to all of America? To me, it is.
It's disgraceful. It goes against everything that Americans stand for. When someone raises their right hand and basically pledges and writes a blank check for everything up to and including their life for other people, those other people are indebted to them to at least give them what is promised. And when our president or any legislator or person in authority attempts to renege on that promise, it is an abomination. It's, in my opinion, traitorous. It does give aid and comfort to the enemy when you degrade the status of your own armed forces. And the bottom line is, Robert, it's just plain wrong and un-American.
And, you know, that is what I feel because, you know, them people that went to Iraq did not only give up their families, but a lot of them come home with a trauma that only a person in war would understand. And so how is it that the misunderstanding and the disingenuousness of, well, not only the politicians of the people that served, how is their disingenuousness actually making it so people never want to serve in the military again?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, you raise your right hand, you pledge your life, your livelihood, your relationships, your family. In the case of National Guard and Reserve soldiers, your career. All that's on the line. So when you come back and you pledge that, everything up to and including your life, you expect to be treated with respect when you come home. You expect to be at least given the things that you were promised. And I think one of the, you said we would talk about some of the current events. Well, one of the most disgraceful things was when President Obama went down to Fort Hood regarding the latest shooting down there and blamed it on mental illness, when there's very little information given about the mental, emotional, psychological status of the shooter, other than he was seeking treatment. It could very well have been that that soldier was exposed to traumatic brain injury, which is a physical hurt. It's not a mental hurt. It should not be treated with psychotropic drugs. We learned very quickly from the Army leadership that the shooter was on multiple medications. But to say that mental illness caused him to do what he did is very misleading. And what it does is it degrades the real issue that many of us would prefer to talk about, which why aren't soldiers on that base and every base on this planet able to defend themselves. They're professional soldiers. They're learned in many different weapons, weapon safety, and should be allowed to protect themselves.
You just brought up an interesting point with that last word, protect ourselves. How is this country afraid to let the citizens protect themselves? They'd rather let us be victims than protect ourselves and stand up for ourselves. How is that played out in the world, do you feel, especially here in this country?
Well, if you look at history, Robert, it's very clear. Dictators throughout history have banned weapons and banned certain groups of people from owning weapons, and the one big reason for that is that they don't want them to be able to challenge the regimes all over the world. If you find a dictator, you'll find extreme gun control laws, and in this country, there's a struggle going on. There's a struggle between those who want to control people and those who want to control themselves. And those who want to control themselves, maybe they want to own a weapon. Maybe they like to carry their Bible in one hand and their weapon in the other. And there's certain people that don't want that because they're afraid that if they get too powerful, that person with that weapon might just want to use it against them. So to prevent that, they want to slowly but surely disarm people. And the big symbol that I'm sure we can all remember, it was several years ago when the president had a United States Marine open and hold an umbrella over his head. And that symbolism, Robert, should say to every single American that this commander-in-chief is incompetent, he has no clue what he's doing, and he desecrated the honor and integrity of a United States Marine in front of God, country, and the whole world when he had that Marine hold that umbrella over his head. He could have had an aide do it. No one in the military has authorized umbrellas to begin with. It was just a complete slap in the face. And that's what our military faces on a daily basis.
You know, is it just his ineptness, or is it just his egotistical arrogance and selfishness in showing people he has the power?
I choose all of the above and probably some intentional symbolism to those whom he really serves. And those whom he really serves are left liberal, communists, socialists, Islamists, anyone but a true patriot American are those that he serves. He does not serve us. He does not serve those who value and treasure freedom and liberty, which was a gift of blood, sweat, and tears given to us by our forebears. He doesn't care about that, and it doesn't matter to him what he does as long as he has the support of those that support him.
And now, Montgomery, how is his misunderstanding and lack of knowledge in the Ukraine really hurting the United States in a way that the American people don't see?
Well, it took time. Pulling out of Iraq sent a very strong message to the world. And the message that sent is that if you depend on the United States to be your friend for as long as you need us to be your friend, that's not going to be the case. If he could, he'd pull us out of every country other than the United States and probably sequester all military on bases. He despises the military. But that sent a strong message. Last spring, he withdrew all Abrams M1, A1 main battle tanks from Germany. The last tanks were brought home. It was only until very recently that the M1, A2s were put back. He sent 600 troops into Poland and said that these troops were going to perform military exercises. So he's playing catch-up. He's reacting to the enemy, which is exactly what the enemy wants. The enemy wants him to react because they thought this out several moves down the road here. And there's really nothing that he can do to prevent Russia from doing whatever Russia wants to do. He basically thrown his hands up. and said that we're going to withdraw from everywhere where we have troops, and we're not going to use our power projection platforms. We're not going to project our power and influence into trouble areas of the world. But the contradiction to that, Robert, is the fact that read in the paper just last week that our country is now giving heavy weapons to rebels in Syria. And the heavier weapons include shoulder-fired anti-aircraft and anti-tank weapons. And as far as I know, from what I've heard and read and have learned, we don't know who the rebels are. One day they're the good guys. The other day, next day, they're the bad guys. They're Al-Qaeda. They're not Al-Qaeda. It's kind of shooting in the dark. It's really embarrassing, the foreign policy that this president and this administration has put forward. And these are just a few examples. But as far as the Ukraine goes, that's Russia's ball of wax. They're going to do whatever they please, and they'll do it when they please. And there's not a whole lot that we can or are willing to do, and there's not a whole lot that NATO is willing to do. If the leader in the European Union, Germany, is not going to take the lead on this and do anything of any consequence, why should anyone else?
And also, Montgomery, just listening here, am I missing the point, or is this administration and all of our politicians and people in the foreign, in the State Department, have they learned nothing about these people? They fight both sides. One day they're an insurgent. The next day they're filing papers to be in the police department or in the army. Do these guys ever figure out these guys just move around and they can't trust them, and giving them anti-tank weapons and all that stuff? Isn't that just going to come back to hurt our own people?
I believe so. As an outsider. And I'm sure, you and I don't have all the information. It appears as though they're completely incompetent. One minute he'll draw a red line in the sand and say, if you cross this line, X, Y, Z will happen, without ever having thought through the consequences of that. And on the other hand, you'll see what he did last week by giving heavy weapons to these insurgents. Yet, during the Olympics with Egypt, Putin went back to Russia and signed an arms agreement with Egypt. Why? Because Obama had stopped supporting the military in Egypt, who kicked out the bad guys over there who were trying to start up an Islamist state. It appears that the Obama administration is incompetent. And I think at the tip of that spear, John Kerry, who I consider a traitor to this country, is leading the State Department. You couldn't have made this up. You couldn't have told me 2 years ago before he was elected the second time that this would be the case now. It's just a very scary scenario.
When Kerry was running for president, I was very unimpressed. And the more I listened to him at the State Department, to me, it just seems like maybe it's just the Democrats, maybe it's the Republicans. They really don't have a grasp on everything that should be going on. They're trying to shoot in the dark and hope the daylight hits, is what I see. Is that what you're seeing there too, Montgomery?
Well, again, we don't have all the information, but I agree with you that is the appearance of what's going on. And I think the world reaction is starting to grow, and people are getting more and more anxious because they can't depend on us to do the right thing. They can't depend on the United States of America to be the type of leader we have traditionally been since World War II. In fact, we still have troops in countries we defeated in World War II. And those countries, for example, Germany, Japan, and Italy, are some of the top three performers as far as economics go in this world. And guess what? Since World War II, they've been peaceful. So what does that tell you about the value of having a solid relationship with the United States? That would tend to send the message that it would be a good idea to be our friends. Yet the perception and the actions of this current administration are the opposite. They're pulling out, they're pulling back, they're hemming, they're hawing, they're wishy-washy. You can't trust what they say. And other things, from domestic issues to things like Benghazi, which I hope we'll talk about, send mixed messages. When he tells the American people that you can keep your doctor if you like your doctor, you can keep your health plan if you like your health plan, it's going to be cheaper. You're going to save $1,200. And the opposite is true. He loses credibility. When he draws a red line and tells Bashar Assad, if you use chemical weapons, we will take action, and then nothing happens. People lose faith in us. Right, wrong, or indifferent, if you can't keep your word, Robert, people don't trust you.
You know, it isn't only keeping the word. You know, 55% of communication is action. If your words say one thing and your actions don't, people just lose all trust or even have any faith, and they never want to communicate with you. And to add to that, China now has the world's largest economy. Where does that put us, Montgomery, with everything you just said? Second largest world, we're the second largest economy. People are going to stop doing commerce with us. And a lot of it has to do with the poor representation of our politicians, don't you say? Or how do you feel about that, Montgomery?
You hit the nail on the head. We can't get out of our own way. On the one hand, we could be energy independent if we wanted to be. If we used our resources, if we had access to all of our resources, we could be energy independent. What? How would that change? I think people would be coming to us instead of us pulling back. We could be going to people and helping them build their countries. We could have more resources and more opportunity to reach out to folks and help them develop their own form of democracy, their own freedom and liberty. Things that we used to do. You know, the Peace Corps was such an amazing outreach program, started about 50 or so years ago. We had all these programs. We had the Marshall Plan. We helped our former enemies rebuild their infrastructure. We subsidized their defense. We were the shining star in a black night that created energy and warmth and just everything that you would expect in a leader. That's what this country stood for. And in a matter of just several years, that's been turned on its head to the point where people can't trust us. They're unsure about our economic stability. So that just permeates everyone else's economy, everyone else's government. It's almost as if we're turning in again into a multipolar world where former third world countries are kind of shaking their finger and getting their way. And if they can't get it from us, guess where they're going to get it from? They'll get it from China. They'll get it from Russia. They'll get it from Iran, maybe even North Korea. So it's either us or it's the bad guys. And my choice is, let's be more assertive. Let's preserve our power projection platform so we can use our power and influence for good, that we can again be the strong leader that we once were in this world.
The book is Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay by Montgomery Granger. You can get it on Amazon, and you can also just Google, do an internet search and come up with it. Now, Montgomery, if somebody chose to read Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay, and with everything you just said, how would this open up their awareness to understand that leaving Iraq, or even leaving the countries, because when you pull your military out, you're pulling out the ambassadors of the United States at the same time. So how would reading your book and understanding the military is actually an ambassador to the world as much as it is a military might?
Well, I think every American can be proud of Guantanamo Bay, can be proud of 99.9% of the soldiers, airmen, naval personnel, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen who served there. It is truly a joint mission, and it is based on the law of land warfare, or in the Army, it's the Field Manual 27-10, and if folks can Google that, Department of the Army Field Manual 27-10, and what that is the Army's version of pertinent Geneva Convention regulations that pertain to the laws of war. Also, the basic rules of the Geneva Convention and additional protocols are published in an International Committee of the Red Cross pamphlet. And you can probably contact the ICRC to get a copy of that. And that's another document that we would study and refer to. We are trained to treat all detainees, whether or not they're lawful combatants, legal combatants, protected persons, prisoners of war, with dignity and respect. And that's exactly the treatment that every detainee received at Guantanamo Bay. And my book gives you a day-to-day, nuts and bolts, down and dirty, true story about what it's like to serve in the global war on terror, and specifically what it's like at Guantanamo Bay on a daily basis. And I think if Americans were to read that, they would have a strong appreciation for their service people, and they would have a sense of pride in how we treat those who would kill us. It truly is remarkable, Robert, how well we treat those who are sworn to kill us. And it is unlike any other country would treat them. The International Committee of the Red Cross Physicians, with whom I worked both at Gitmo and later on in Iraq, told me in both places unequivocally that nobody does detention operations better than the United States. We're not perfect. No one is. And there have been problems. But those problems are few, far between, and dealt with swiftly and completely and correctly. And it is a very disciplined operation down there, and something, again, that every single American, if you read my book, and there are other things out there you can look at, I call my book A Small Piece to a Big Puzzle about the enigma that we call Gitmo. And it's just one story, but it is a real story and one that everyone can learn from. In the beginning of the book, Robert, I talk about the history of military incarceration. It's very brief. I also use the definition of torture, because that's a big question that I get, especially from folks who believe that Guantanamo Bay is a gulag and is a torture chamber, and we abuse folks down there, which is just completely untrue. I got frustrated after I got back from my service deployments, because the mainstream media, Robert, would tell lies. The mainstream media would perpetuate myths about Guantanamo Bay, about soldiers down there, about how detainees are treated. And I just got fed up with it. And I kept a journal down there, and I turned the journal into the book Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay, because I got fed up with all the nonsense from the mainstream media. And it's still perpetuated today. It hasn't changed much. But if your listeners, even if you don't want to take a chance on a book and buy one, ask your local library to pick up a copy. You already pay for the library. So in a way, you've already paid for my book if you go to your local library and ask them to get a copy. But I really think that folks need to educate themselves on the real story about Gitmo. And if they do that, they'll support keeping it open, and they'll understand and appreciate that the United States is the leader in treatment of detainees. And the only people who really want Gitmo to close are the enemy. The enemy wants it closed. or just use it for propaganda. The self-starvers down there, or the so-called hunger strikers, they don't want to die. They just want to manipulate U.S. political will. They want to get all the left liberal crazies out there on our backs to close that place and forget about even capturing any of them anymore. 29% of them are recidivists, have gone back to the battlefield. Ben Kumru led the attack on Benghazi. So, you know, it's crazy that we capture these folks and then let about 170 of them go, many of whom have come back to try to kill us and have killed us.
And also, you just brought up Benghazi. And how is that another government let down and didn't back up what they were going to do? It was easier to do nothing than to do something.
I don't think words can describe it. I'm very upset today. Again, there are hearings on Benghazi. Again, the president's press secretary, or Carney, is telling lies, bald-faced lies, to the American people about the atrocity, the betrayal of Benghazi. The inactions of our government, and specifically the State Department and the President of the United States, who is the commander-in-chief, by the way, their refusal to act, to even attempt to give relief to those who are under attack, is, in my opinion, treasonous. It's criminal negligence. It's accessory to murder. And if the President of the United States, if Hillary Clinton, if Ms. Rice, and anyone and everyone involved don't come to the American public and admit that they lied about Benghazi, don't tell us the full truth of Benghazi, and then resign, I think it is a must that our legislators have a committee, a select committee with subpoena power, and get everyone up to and including the President of the United States to give statements. And if those statements are found to be false, are prosecuted for perjury. And if the statements are proven to be true and there's criminal intent or there are criminal actions involved, they should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law.
Isn't there right up front a neglected duty to protect the people in this?
That is a very basic thing. That's what we, you know, is in the military, from a private all the way up to the four-star general, you have an obligation to the man or woman next to you. You have a duty to protect, defend, to never leave behind. And this is why it strikes to the core of all the military people that I've talked to with this, or read stories that they've written about it, or opinion pieces, it strikes to the core of what we are trained to be: loyal, to respect duty, to be respectful, to give selfless service, honor, integrity, and display personal courage. It strikes to the very core values that I was taught as a combat medic, that I was taught later as an officer in the United States Army. It strikes to our very heart and core of our military soul, Robert, that you don't ever leave someone behind, that you don't turn your back on your buddy, that if your buddy's in trouble, you do whatever it takes to help them and to save them and to bring them to safety. And I know that there are military people out there hurting right now, right today, that could have done something, that wanted to do something, and were told to stand down. They were told not to move. And we need to find out who told them that and why they told them that, and to punish that behavior. It is disrespectful. It's pathetic. And you know, I can't really find the appropriate words. All these words are just words. What really hurts is the fact that this betrayal would go on at all, and from the very top. And that's who I blame for this, the very top, the person responsible is the commander-in-chief. Commanders are responsible for their subordinates, and they have to take responsibility when things go wrong. They have to stand up, admit that they did the wrong thing, and then take the consequences for that.
You know, there's something, you just said something. How is our political leaders afraid to stand up and make choices for the American people, do you feel, that ain't just strictly for corporate America?
It brings to mind the saying, say it ain't so, Joe. You know, I'm reading things today about reactions to today's Benghazi hearings, and I'm reading things like Boehner won't allow a House Select Committee. And I don't know if that's true or if it's just something that is put out there. But if that's true, it's just, again, a betrayal. How can the leader of the Republican Party not accept the fact that there needs to be stronger subpoena power beyond the committee that's doing these little interviews? You need a select committee. And you need a select committee with strong subpoena power. And you need to get people on record who had the authority to make the decisions that were made in the Benghazi atrocity. If you don't do that, then what are you doing? And I think that every single representative, Democrat, Independent, and Republican, should stand up to Boehner, should stand up to Harry Reid in the Senate and say, this is enough. We have to get to the bottom of this. This strikes to the very core of who we are as Americans. If we can't get to the bottom of this, what then can we do? And if we don't get to the bottom of this, it will set a precedent for every person that comes after Obama to do whatever they want to win an election. You want to lie to the American people about health care? You want to lie to the American people about an embassy and an ambassador who were murdered? That's fine, because nothing will ever happen to you. You want to use the IRS to target conservative groups? No problem. It's just a situation where we have to stand up and say, I'm mad as hell, and I can't take it anymore. And we need to communicate that to our representatives now.
And I agree, but here's a question I've had and I want to ask you. How is having commanders-in-chief without some form of, like, officer training or something in the military actually hurt the United States?
You know what? Right? You have to stop making sense. Throughout history, I think our best commanders-in-chiefs have had some military background, have been a general, an officer. A few might have been enlisted, but many have been officers. I think at least a third of our presidents. But there are a couple presidents who had no formal military training that proved to be some of the best. And one of the reasons Abraham Lincoln was one of our best commanders in chief, he was a self-taught attorney. He was also a self-taught general. And I say he was a self-taught general because when he became president of the United States, he asked for every single book that was taught to cadets at the United States Military Academy. He studied what the generals studied. He picked the brains of generals. He made it his personal mission in life to understand and appreciate warfare and how it is fought. And he was such a good thinker, such a deliberate thinker, that he gave a lot of patience and trust in his generals and finally came to one conclusion. The conclusion he came to finally was that he didn't necessarily need the best book-smart general. He needed a general who was willing to take measured risks and win the war. And that's why he picked Ulysses S. Grant, and Grant picked Sherman. Because those two men decided that they were going to win the war. And they were unorthodox, They were ruthless, and it was all about preserving the Union as far as Lincoln was concerned. And our best commanders-in-chief have military backgrounds. They know how to lead. They know how to select the best people for the best job, and they know how to supervise. They know how to plan and execute. And it just, to have someone in that position that hasn't a clue, and not only just doesn't have a clue, Robert, that's one thing. Because Lincoln had a militia position and had very little military experience, but recognized that it was his obligation and his responsibility to teach himself and to learn as much as he could about that profession, the profession of arms. There's never going to be a time when we don't need someone in that position who knows what he's doing or what she's doing. And so I hope the American people have learned a lesson here. Pick someone who's at least willing to learn, you know?
And see, it's actually, to me, it's the selfish arrogance of himself is what it is. He'd rather look good than be good.
Yeah, he would rather get elected, and he got elected twice on lies.
Yeah,
and now he's looking for a legacy. He's going to have to look really hard, because I think the legacy that he is piling on top of himself now is a legacy of incompetence, foolishness, and just a really disappointing and humiliating legacy that he's going to have after he's gone from this presidency.
And, you know, we was talking about Obamacare. You know, I had a guy on that's a real, he's in investment. You know, they can repeal Obamacare, but there's stuff in there that has taxes in there that can't be repealed.
Well, I don't know if I have heard that or agree with that, because we had, you know, the three branches of government, and what some people forget above that, the American people. So
yeah.
The legislators have power to make law. The president has the power to administer the law, and the Supreme Court have the power to interpret the law. But the people... this country is of, by, and for the people, and the people will make that final decision. If we rise up and we tell our government that enough is enough, we're not going to take this anymore, you've got to change it, then that's what will happen. Whether we have a constitutional convention and change the Constitution, whether we have a bloodless coup, whether we have patriots marching on Washington and telling folks the way that we want it to be, if that's what it takes, then that's what will happen. But there's no law that can't be repealed.
And I agree with that. And with that, Montgomery, we're out of time. And the book is Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay. And actually, people, open up and expand your wisdom about Guantanamo Bay and everything that went down there. And if the media is saying something, they're trying to twist your mind into being like somebody else. So do your own thinking, own investigation, open your mind. And the book is Guantanamo Bay. It's available on Amazon.com. And where else can they get the book, Montgomery?
Right. They can go to my website, my author website, which is sbpra.com/Montgomery J. Granger. That's my author website. But it is available on Kindle as well. You can Google it that way. It's an ebook, and also the second edition is in softcover now, also available through Amazon.
And anyway, the book is Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay. Expand your wisdom about really what went on at Guantanamo Bay. Montgomery, I want to thank you and all the listeners for being here, and I'm going to ask you to give the people some wisdom, and then I'm going to close out the show.
Well, thank you, Robert. God bless you and God bless your audience. Folks, never forget that you are the people. You are in charge. And the folks that you vote for and even the ones that you don't vote for are there to do our bidding and not their own. Thanks again, Robert. Have a great night.
You too, Montgomery. And thank you for being here. And I thank all the listeners. And I'm going to say good night.